Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, listeners. Luke's English podcast is sponsored by iTalki, a service that you can use to find native speakers and qualified English teachers for online lessons and conversations. Go to teacherluke.co.uk/talk to get started. And when you make your first purchase, because you're a listener to this podcast, iTalki will reward you with 100 free lesson credits. That's equivalent to about $10 of English lessons free. To get that offer, go to teacherluke.co.uk/talk or just click on one of the iTalki logos that you'll find on my page. And if you really want to fast track your English to fluency, you can do it by talking to native speakers on iTalki. Okay, right, so now let's get started with this new episode of Luke's English Podcast, and here it is now. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Luke's English Podcast. How are you? How are you doing? Hope you're fine. I hope you're well, wherever you are in the world, and whatever you happen to be doing at this moment. Joining me on the podcast today is Ollie Richards, a polyglot who speaks 8 languages. Ollie has some very motivating and practical advice on how to learn languages as an adult. There's so much to learn from Ollie in this episode, so I really want you to pay attention and have a proper think about the ways in which you are learning English. I realise that I really sound like a teacher at this point, don't I? Or your dad or something, you know? Now pay attention, sit up straight, put that down, stop fidgeting, listen to the man. This is very important for your English in the future. So, yes, I sound like your dad or a teacher or something at the beginning, just because I'm trying to get you to pay attention to this episode because I think it's going to be a good one. So what I've personally taken away from this episode is the importance of making a commitment to yourself about your language learning. Commitment is really important for giving you the motivation to get things done and to add language learning habits into your lifestyle. Commitment, motivation, habit, positivity, these are some of the vital elements for language learning. It's also about being honest with yourself about what you're doing to really push your learning forwards. It's about taking responsibility for learning and finding your own little strategies for adding language learning into your daily routine. Ollie is a living example of how it really is possible to learn languages as busy adults. If you listen until the end of this episode, then you'll hear me make a commitment to myself about my French. And it's a good feeling because I really need to get a grip on that because my French is not as good as I would like it to be. So you'll hear Ollie encourage me to make a commitment about my French. But also, Ollie and I invite you to make a commitment about your English too. Even a small commitment. And just write it in the comments section of this episode. I'll talk more about that in a moment. But first, let me tell you a bit about Ollie Richards as an introduction to the guest that I have in this episode. So here are some things that, first of all, people say about language learning. Here are some kind of common things that you hear people saying about language learning. So people say that English people are no good at learning languages. So, yeah, English people are no good at learning languages, right? Well, no, wrong. They also say that to learn a language quickly, you need to be a child. You need to grow up learning that language. Well, that's wrong too, apparently. Another thing people say is that the best way to learn is by signing up to group classes in a language school. Well, no, not necessarily. Also, it's often said that to learn language properly, you need to be living in the country where that language is spoken, but that might not be the case, in fact. And a lot of people say, I'm too busy to learn a language, I don't have time, and I never meet any native speakers. Well, that might not be a reason either, that might just be an excuse. And, yes, another thing people say is this, I'm just no good at languages, I think I'm language-proof. So don't say that to yourself. And also, don't make excuses. There are a lot of excuses out there and reasons why we find it difficult to learn English. And it's the same for me in French. Sometimes I say that my French is just not improving. It's not getting better, but my excuses are improving all the time. I'm getting better and better at making excuses. I'm very fluent in exclusives. I'm very fluent in exclusives. I am quite fluent in exclusives as well, because, you know, I like to bring you exclusive content on Luke's English Podcast. But I'm also quite fluent in excuses when it comes to my French. And, you know, so all of us, really, we often make excuses about our French, but also about our French, about any language. Probably in your case, it might be English. I don't know. Do you? Honestly, do you make excuses to yourself about your English? Possibly. So it's not just excuses, but also it's about these myths that people have about learning a language, like the fact that, you know, you can't do it as an adult, or that you need to be living in another country to be able to do it. Well, these things are not necessarily true. They may just be myths. Now, keep listening, all right? Because that's what this episode is all about, amongst other things. Now, Ollie Richards. Ollie is proof, he's living proof that English people, just like any other nationality, are perfectly capable of learning a foreign language to a proficient level. In fact, Ollie is a polyglot, which means that he can speak lots of different languages. In fact, at the moment, Ollie can speak Spanish, French, Italian, Brazilian Portuguese, Japanese, Cantonese, and Arabic. That's not bad for a guy from England, a country where most people just speak one language. And some people struggle even with just one language, to be honest, especially after a few drinks. So, what's the story with Ollie? Is he just a specially gifted person? Was he born with the language gene? Or does he have the force? You know, is the force strong with him or something like that? Does he have just way more time in the day than anyone else? Did he go to some really brilliant language schools and follow the amazing methods of a language guru? Or did he just learn these languages as a child by growing up in different countries? Well, the answer to all of these questions seems to be no. No, he isn't. No, he wasn't. He doesn't. He didn't. No, in all those cases. In fact, Ollie says that he doesn't have a particular gift for language acquisition. He wasn't born with a language gene. He doesn't really like learning in a classroom environment, so he didn't just attend some great classes in other languages. And these days, he has a very busy schedule, just like the rest of us, with his job and also the great work that he does on his website, iwillteachyoualanguage.com. So it's not like he's got acres of spare time at his disposal. Also, Ollie didn't learn any of these languages as a child. They've all been learned during adulthood. So how has he done it? How has he managed to learn lots of languages, and how does he keep them all in his head at the same time? What are the techniques for effective language learning as an adult? And also, what's Ollie like as a person, and what stories can he tell us? That is essentially what you're going to get in this episode, all those answers and more. You'll also hear Ollie give me a much-needed motivational boost about my French. In fact, while talking to Ollie, as I mentioned earlier, I made a commitment to myself to improve my French in one simple way every day, and that is simply to do a minimum of 10 minutes of study from my French textbook every evening. That's it. It's not a big commitment, but it's a starting point. It doesn't sound like much, but I think it's a beginning, and I really believe that if I make that a really fixed daily habit, it could make all the difference to my French. It's just a little starting point. And you can do it too, but with English, of course, not French, obviously, unless you're also learning French, in which case, yes, you could do it too. In fact, in this episode, we invite you to make a simple commitment to yourself about learning English today, and to write that in the comments section. So make a little commitment to yourself about learning English. Could be a small thing. And share it with us. Write it in the comments section. And Ollie has said that he himself would be glad to respond to your comments in the comments section of this episode and to give you some encouragement and other words. Okay? So listen until the end of this conversation to find out more about that. Okay, so it's now time to start the conversation with Ollie Richards, the professional English polyglot who has tons of advice on how to learn languages as an adult. Okay, ready? Right, let's go. So, hi, Ollie. How are you doing?
Great to talk to you, Luke. I'm doing well.
Welcome to Luke's English Podcast.
Fantastic to be here.
You're in London at the moment, aren't you?
Yep, I am. It's a grey, cold, rainy day in London, like every other day.
It's a grey, cold, rainy day here in Paris too. So, you know, we don't in Paris we get pretty much the same weather that you get in London, but London gets the bad reputation.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? We're very close. I think actually I'm closer to Paris than I am to Scotland. Mm. It's not the tropics, that's for sure.
Yeah. What are you doing these days? Because I mean, you travel around a lot. You seem to be involved in so many different projects. What's going on at the moment?
Yeah. Well, so I have a blog, as you know, called I Will Teach You a Language, and that's really the main thing that I work on. So I write articles about learning foreign languages, and that's the main thing that I do. And of course, off that, I have a YouTube channel where I make videos of various things, and I have a podcast as well. And I have all these different things going on, but still really the main thing that I like to do every week is write articles helping people to find better ways of learning languages. Recently, we started doing a lot of live workshops. So we've been running workshops in London and New York recently. I'm trying to set up a lot of cool language events in London to trying to, you know, get people involved, build a community of people out there who want to find better ways of learning languages.
I've heard on your podcast, you talk about the Polyglot Pub.
Yeah.
What's the Polyglot Pub all about? Because obviously I love the sound of that partly because of the word pub. But also putting the word polyglot in front of it, I imagine beer and numerous languages. What happens in the Polyglot Pub?
Yeah, so the Polyglot Pub is an event that I started very recently. We only started in November last year. And the idea behind the Polyglot Pub is to have a place where people who are interested in learning languages can come and meet other people who also like languages. Now, in places like in London, and I'm sure in Paris as well, and all around the world, there are always lots of language exchange events, right? If you want to go and practice your French or whatever, you can go to a meetup and practice your French. Polyglot Pub is not really a language exchange. What it is a place for people who love languages to come together and talk about languages. And so we go to a pub, and we talk about languages.
Great. Sounds good. So, okay, so you're a polyglot. Now, how many languages do you actually speak then, Ollie?
So I speak 8 languages to various levels. One of the things about learning lots of languages is it's kind of quite difficult to juggle, you know, so you kind of have one language that you get very good and then you start to focus on other languages and they kind of drop, and the other ones drop down. And so it's always a kind of a balancing act. But I know 8 languages.
Okay. So what's your best language? What's your favorite language, let's say?
It's such a difficult question. I mean, the languages that I'm most comfortable in are probably Spanish and Portuguese. Mm-hmm. Which I consider myself totally fluent in. My French and my Japanese are also very good. I wouldn't call myself totally fluent in those languages, but you know, I can do everything I need to do in those languages. And then I also speak Cantonese and Arabic, which are, you know, work in progress. I can have, you know, confident conversations in those languages, but they're not perfect. Mm. And then Italian's a funny one because Italian, I used to speak it very well, but then for all the different places I've been living in the last few years, I haven't really done any practice. So Italian's a language that I understand a lot of, but speaking, I'd need a good few weeks to get it back and unrust.
Right.
Yeah. Unrust my Italian chops.
So that was, let me just go through that again. So that was Spanish, Portuguese, French, Japanese, Cantonese, Arabic, and Italian. And sort of Italian's the one that needs a bit of work at the moment.
Italian's the one that I couldn't really with a straight face say that I could speak it really well right now. And then English, of course, which I have been known to speak from time to time.
You're quite good at English, I have to say. That's my professional opinion. But
thank you.
Now, So it's mind-boggling to me, right? Because I'm a typical English person. I just speak English, okay? Which is, I think, is fairly typical. People say about English people that they don't learn other languages, or maybe that they even can't. They're not very good at learning other languages. You seem to be an exception to that rule. And so it's mind-boggling to me that you can have these complicated, diverse languages all sort of in your brain at the same time. Like, I lived in Japan for a couple of years, and so I learned a little bit of Japanese. And now when I try and speak Japanese after living in France for a couple of years, it all comes out French. Yeah. Like my Japanese is all French. Yeah. It's almost like my... Now, I may be wrong, but it feels like my brain is only able to hold 1.5 languages. I'm sure that's not true. I mean, you're proof that it's not true. So how do you hold...
Here's the thing.
Go on.
Yeah, here's the thing. It's because everybody has the same problem. It's a perfectly normal thing to happen. And I think what people don't realize is that actually one thing is to learn a language. Another thing is to be able to use that language at the same time as another. So I remember when I first learned Spanish, I was living in London, and I learned Spanish to a good level. And then I spent some time in Brazil and I learned Portuguese. And, it was kind of easy to learn Portuguese after Spanish because they're very similar languages. Mm. But then I remember one day I went back to London and I met my Spanish friend. And we were just starting to chat in Spanish. And I couldn't speak. Like, it was just Portuguese coming out of my mouth.
Right.
And I was really shocked because only a few months earlier, my Spanish was, like, really, really good. And suddenly, it was only Portuguese coming out of my mouth, just like your example with the Japanese and French, right? But I think because I knew that my Spanish was good, I knew that surely I can't have just lost it. And so over the months that followed, I spent a lot of time working on both Spanish and Portuguese and using them at the same time. So I was kind of fortunate. I was living, I was in London, and I had a lot of friends who were musicians, and they played Brazilian music. And so I'd go out to these bars and these pubs, and there would be Brazilians there, and there would be lots of South Americans there, like people from Spanish-speaking countries. Mm. And so I could, almost every day I would be practicing using Spanish and Portuguese at the same time, switching from one to the other. And it took a bit of time, but after a couple of months, I was then very, very comfortable switching between Spanish and Portuguese, and I didn't forget either of them. So what I learned from that experience was that to use two languages at the same time is almost like learning another language. Hmm. Because you just have to learn to separate them in your mind. And if you just kind of leave it up to chance and you say, well, I'll just see what happens, that's when you get into trouble. You really have to, when you speak 2, 3, 4 or more languages, you really have to regularly practice them so that you can keep them separate in your brain.
Okay, so it's just about regular practice.
It is really, yeah.
Yeah.
But practice at using them both together, it's mm-hmm. tricky.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing what the brain can do, isn't it, I suppose. We don't really tap all of the potential of our minds, and if you work on it, we can, you can achieve so many things. I mean, I guess it's part of that, isn't it? Yeah.
A lot of it's about just being intentional. It's about intentionality. And I think for a lot of people, they would really like to learn another language, but they don't really put in the effort. Mm. Now, a lot of people like going to the gym. So they'll go after work every day, they'll go to the gym and they'll spend 45 minutes or an hour in the gym 4 or 5 times a week. Other people like going to the pub and drinking. Other people like sitting and reading books. If you want to learn a language and become good at it, you have to work at it every day. And it really is a lifestyle choice. So, but I think for a lot of people, they kind of think that they should just kind of pick it up naturally. So you went to Japan and you saw how difficult it is to learn Japanese. Mm. I don't know how much you really worked at it and studied on a regular basis.
Not that much. I did take some lessons. I had a book which I kind of didn't look at very much. I used to hang out with Japanese people, and I used to play darts. Actually, the time when I learned most Japanese was when I was playing darts in the local bar with my Japanese friends. I used to go there every it was Sunday evening. It was basically Friday evening for me because Mondays and Tuesdays were my day off. But I used to go down there and drink cocktails and play darts. And I I learned the language of how to play darts. That's it. I can play darts in Japanese. I don't think I can't anymore, actually, because it's been so long. But I used to be able to, you know, count all the numbers up to 180. And I used to be able to, you know, make fun of my friends and say, oh, you're rubbish. You know, you can't throw. And that was close. And I won and you lost. And all, you know, just the basic things you need to play darts.
Well, that's a great example of how when you do something regularly and intentionally, you learn, right? But most people don't do that. They kind of expect to just pick it up naturally. To learn a language quickly and to learn it well, you have to really be intentional and say, right, every day I'm going to focus on this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to, you know, whatever your strategy or your method is. It has to be something you do every day. And, you know, I started learning languages when I was 19. Or 1920.
Yeah.
Okay. So before that, I didn't know any languages. I'm kind of a late starter. I didn't have languages around me as a kid. I started when I was 19, 20 years old. But I've spent a lot of time doing it. You know, I spend time every single day learning one language or another. And so, you know, it's not easy. It's not something that's just. I don't consider it to be a talent, a natural talent. I consider it to be the product of hard work. Mm. And, you know, that's whenever we might get into this later, perhaps. But, you know, whenever people ask me, you know, how do you do it or what should I do to learn a language? Well, my first question is, well, how much time do you spend on it?
Yeah.
And invariably the answer is, well, not very much.
Yeah.
And that's the answer. You know, people don't generally put in the time to learn.
Mm-hmm. There are so many questions that I have to ask you. I think it's an absolutely fascinating subject and I'm very impressed with what you do. Before we go through some of those questions, let me hear some of the languages that you can speak. Can you just give us a blast? I mean, you can say whatever you want. Just, you know, I suppose the usual thing is to introduce yourself with a couple of sentences. Just give us a blast of some of those languages, if you
would. No problem. Excellent. بس شكراً أنا 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 سعيد جداً بتكلم معاك النهارده. أنا بحب أوي البودكاست بتاعك. أنا أعتقد إنه كويس جداً. Merci pour l'invitation, c'est un plaisir de parler avec toi aujourd'hui. Muchas gracias por haberme invitado. Intentamos hacerlo hace un par de meses, no era posible, pero me alegro que lo podemos hacer hoy. Sasote kurete domo arigato gozaimasu. What's next?
That was let me guess, that was Arabic, then was that Arabic first?
Arabic first.
Then French. There was something in between Arabic and
there
French.
Was Spanish. There was Arabic, Spanish, French, Japanese.
Right.
Maybe not in that order.
Arabic, French, Spanish, Japanese, and a bit of Portuguese or Italian.
No, not yet.
No.
Portuguese é o seguinte. que eu posso dizer? É meio estranho falar a mesma coisa assim. Em vários idiomas diferentes, mas bom, eu estou muito feliz de estar aqui hoje com você. E, grande, né? Condom A. Todo ele tem o seu legal de mão. Vou dar ligou podcast, tá aí, ho, one. And,
wow, yeah. That's so cool. That sounded amazing.
That was Portuguese and then and Cantonese.
Right, okay. What were you saying there then, basically?
Kind of thanks for having me on the show. It's cool to talk to you. We've been trying to do it for a while, and it's great to finally be on here. And I also said it's a bit strange to try to think of something to say in one language after the next.
Yeah. Fantastic. So, yeah. Fantastic. That is.
It is. I have to say, it is actually very hard to kind of to switch between lots of different languages. Like, it's one of the hardest things, actually, because it's kind of a natural question for people to ask, oh, say something in all your languages.
Yeah.
But actually, to say something coherent and to be able to kind of switch your mindset like that from one language to the next is really, really hard.
Yeah. It would probably be a lot more natural to just engage you in conversation for a couple of minutes in each language. And
Exactly.
It's very rare that you have to just sort of switch between all the languages like that, unless someone has said, go on then, show us your languages, which is people probably do that to you sometimes, I expect.
They do, and it's always funny. But I understand. You have to kind of smile and say sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's there you go, listeners. You heard all the languages. No Russian in there.
Russian is one for further down the line, I think.
Yeah,
that's I'd love to speak Russian, but it's just, you know, I think when I do learn a language, I always have to have a very good reason for it. And that's another important thing, you know. So when I lived in Japan, I learned Japanese. And when I had a bunch of Brazilian friends, I learned Portuguese. That's, for me, is like one of the big motivating factors that keeps me going. And Russian is a language I don't really have any particular connection to. So I probably wouldn't start to learn it until I had that connection.
So if you, for example, if you decided to go and spend some time in Moscow, then suddenly Russian would creep up the list, but it's on the to-do list, I suppose.
I mean, I think the languages I would really like to learn would be German, Russian, and Thai. Those would be on my wish list, if you like.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So there we are. We heard some of your languages. Now, so what's your story then? You said you started learning languages at 19 or 20 years old. What's the story then? How tell us how you've gone from not speaking any languages as a 19-year-old to being, a polyglot now.
Yeah. So it's a very, very organic, organic story, really. And a number of things happened and that all kind of came together. And I often think, actually, if one of these things hadn't occurred, maybe I would have never have learned them. So I just finished my first year at university. I was doing a degree in music, of all things. And my girlfriend at the time one day turned around and said, I don't want to be with you anymore. Now, I've been with her for 2 years, and as a 19-year-old, I don't know if you remember what it's like to be 19, Luke, but it was hard. I took it badly. I took it badly, and I actually left university. So I decided to take a gap year from university, and I was in London, and I was upset. You know, I wasn't in a very good place, and so I decided to go and get a job in a cafe. And for any of you guys who know London, I decided to go and work in this, my favorite cafe in London, which is called Cafe Nero.
Yeah.
And so there I was, 19 years old, working in Cafe Nero, thinking, what on earth am I doing with my life? I've just quit university and I'm working in a cafe. What's going on? And then I started to look around and I realized that I was working with people from all over the world. In working in that cafe there with me were people from France, from Italy, from Japan, from Germany, from Sweden. And I realized that all these guys were in the UK speaking English with me, and in many cases speaking French and Spanish and Italian with each other. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. How are they able to do that? And very quickly, I started to want to speak to them in their languages. So my Italian friend Claudio, I started to think, wow, he's a cool guy. We're good friends. I'd really like to be able to speak to him in Italian. And then, someone else from Sweden and lots of different people. And so I started to just get interested in the idea of being able to communicate with people in their language. So I bought a couple of books, and I think I started trying to learn French and Italian. Didn't get very far. And then one day I didn't want to work in the cafe anymore. And I got on a train and I bought a one-way ticket to Paris. I don't know why.
Sounds familiar, Ollie. That does.
Really?
That idea.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing to do. It's the kind of thing you can only get away with when you're 19. But I did it, and I went to Paris, and I stayed in a youth hostel, and somehow I managed to get a job working on the reception in a youth hostel near Montmartre. And and so there I was, 19 years old, in Paris with a job. It's totally crazy now that I think about it. But obviously, you know, having a job there and being in Paris, I started to learn French and I started to study hard. And within 6 months or so, my French was pretty good. And so I thought, that's pretty cool. I've managed to learn French. What's next? And there were lots of Italians around in the youth hostel where I was working. So I bought an Italian book and I started studying Italian. And then I went to spend a few weeks in Italy with my friend from the cafe in London and learned some Italian, and then went back to London and met my best friend who was Spanish, started learning Spanish with him, and on and on and on, and kind of one language after the next. Every year or two, I'd start to pick up something new.
And that was it, really. Kind of from after that point, after I'd learned two or three languages, I realized that it can be done, and I really enjoy this. It's really cool to talk with other people in their languages. And so then really that's just defined my life since, moving to different countries and doing everything I can to learn the language.
Did you finish the music degree?
I did. Luckily, I went back and I finished. I did three more years of the music degree, and I'm pleased I did, because, well, you know, it's good to have that piece of paper.
Yeah, absolutely. What, by the way, what do you play?
So my main instrument is piano, and my degree was in jazz piano, so I can, yeah, I'm pretty good on the old ivories.
That's fantastic. Has that helped you in your language learning at all?
A lot of people ask that. It's a very, very common question, and I don't know is the answer. I think the obvious benefit for me is in the accent, and I think a lot of people tell me that I have quite a good pronunciation in my various languages. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a result of spending many years playing music, because I think I'm good at hearing the sounds of the language. And when all these different languages, you have these different natural expressions, like the Ayn in Arabic and the Je parle, the French kind of shrug.
There's a certain placement when you say words in French, like the way that it's not just the words on their own, but there's something about the way that you physically deliver the words.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Which is a bit like performing music in a way, you know, it's a question of finding the using your voice as the instrument to deliver the words, you know. It's something, exactly. Some connection. It's a bit of a sketchy connection, but there is something there.
Well, and every language has that, you know. In Spanish, you have this very kind of narrow, in los sonidos, you know, it's very kind of flat language.
Right.
And then, but in Brazilian Portuguese, it's much more lyrical. Quando os brasileiros falam, é tipo que nem uma música, sabe? Subindo, descendo, assim, desse jeito. And so, like, I think having that many years of experience with music really helped me with pronunciation.
Right, yes, okay. So, okay, French in France, Italian in Italy, studying with a textbook and surrounded by French and Italian people. What happened next? Because I understand that the next challenge was to see if you could learn a language without being in the country and surrounded by the people, right?
Right, yeah. So I went back to London and I went back to university, and I made very good friends with a Spanish guy. And now, he won't mind me saying this, but at the time, his English was terrible. And so was my Spanish. I didn't speak any Spanish.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, it was him against me, basically, is how quickly could he learn English and how quickly could I learn Spanish, and right. I won. So I got to a point where I could speak Spanish better than his English, mm-hmm. which isn't saying much, because his English wasn't very good. But the point is that I was able then, because we were best friends, I was able to spend every day in Spain speaking in London speaking Spanish.
Right.
And it was as if, you know, if I'd been living in Spain, I would have had a very similar environment, you know. So it was very, very fortuitous. I was lucky to have those circumstances, but I really made the most of them and learned to speak Spanish. And it was the same with Portuguese. So I then met some Brazilians who became very good friends, and I started learning Brazilian Portuguese in exactly the same way in London.
So is that not just something about London, though, that it's such a multicultural place that you can learn languages there because you can find people in those communities in London? What about if you're in a place where you have no access to native speakers of that language? What do you think?
It's a great question. So here's the thing. Back in the day when I was learning Portuguese and Spanish in London, I used native speakers because I was at university. I had lots of free time. I had lots of people around me. That was cool. These days, I still learn languages all the time, but I do it mostly online.
Yeah.
So I use my favorite teaching service, which is called iTalki, and I get lessons with native speakers, and we just simply chat on Skype.
Mm.
And the reason I do that is because it's so convenient. Mm. I don't have to travel. I don't have to get on the tube and travel across London for 45 minutes and then sit and spend 2 hours in a cafe with them and then travel back, which takes half the day.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to do that anymore. I can just turn on, I can schedule my sessions in advance, and I can just sit and chat on Skype like we're doing right now. And this is pretty cool. Right? Yeah. I mean, it would be nicer, sure, to be face to face in a cafe, but it's not pretty good.
It's not that different, really.
It's not all that different. And so now that's my preferred daily strategy, is having these lessons online. I also do like to meet people face to face when I can.
Yeah.
But that's the answer to the question. Like, it's wherever, if you're living on Mount Everest, and as long as you've got an internet connection,
you could
learn any language in the world just by having these sessions on Skype.
Yeah. Me too. I'm on iTalki as well, and I can have French lessons on iTalki. There's loads of French. They're really easy to find, the teachers. And it's kind of funny because I'm in France, surrounded by French people. But in a way, it's kind of easy just to go online and you know, schedule a lesson. I don't even need to leave the house. I don't even need to put some trousers on. I can just do it. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously I should be wearing trousers,
This is a video chat with your teachers, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, as long as the camera is facing in the right place, then it doesn't matter. But anyway, the point is that, yeah, it's really convenient. Okay.
Well, when I was living in Egypt, fast forward a few years, when I was in Egypt last year, again, surrounded by Arabic speakers, how did I have my lessons? On Skype, because it's simply more convenient and easier.
Right. Okay.
So it's not an excuse. It's a very common thing. Oh, I don't have native speakers around me. Yes, you do. You just have to get online and find them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so after having learnt these languages, you then decided to sort of set up your website, which is iwillteachyoualanguage.com. And so just how long have you been doing that?
About 2.5 years now. Getting on for almost somewhere between 2 and 2.5 years.
Yeah. Okay. And so, basically, on the website, what do you do? What's the sort of primary thing that you do with the website?
So, with the website, the website and the podcast is kind of similar. So, my main aim is to show people. Well, I guess I do two things. I show people how I'm learning languages. So, if you go to the website, to iwillteachyoualanguage.com, you'll see videos of me showing you how I'm studying every day, and also some other cool videos of me speaking various languages in various places. So I kind of show you how I do that. And then when people write in with questions, and when I see that people are struggling with a particular thing, I'll write about that. So it's really just, you know, talking from my experience of learning myself and also working with people, like, what do you need to know to learn a language quickly? And then with the I Will Teach You a Language podcast, it's similar, but what I do is I answer people's questions directly. So if you have a question about language learning, like, you know, how do I get a good accent in English, or how do I use phrasal verbs or whatever, then people send me their questions and I simply answer them on the show. It's very short. It's only about 10 minutes. But the principle is the same. Is I'm taking people's questions and things that they want to know and helping them and showing them how to learn languages quickly.
Yeah. I listen to your podcast and I find it very useful for just giving me encouragement and giving me sort of the kind of mental strategies for learning French, because I just need that. Those little tips and those bits of advice on, you know, what I should be doing, and just practical stuff as well, because I mean, we may talk about my French in a bit, and I might ask you for some advice, but
sure.
Generally I find the podcast useful just as a bit of an encouragement and just a sort of achievable set of strategies that I can apply to learning. And I recommend you to my students too, because I have French students who, you know, I'm always trying to persuade them that they need to spend more time studying English than just the time they spend in the classroom. I do recommend your podcast as well.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
It's I Will Teach You a Language podcast, and you can find that on iTunes or other podcast software, I guess. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Whatever you use to listen to podcasts, whether it's Stitcher Radio or iTunes, just type in I Will Teach You a Language and it should pop right up.
Okay. So I just wonder if you've got any kind of top tips for improving your language level in any language. Do you have any top tips that you could share with us?
It really depends who I'm talking to. Because, you know, if you're a beginner, then you have a certain set of things to do. And then if you're more advanced or you're kind of maybe hit a plateau, then you have another set of things to do. In any case, it usually comes down to focusing on a couple of core things. So should we maybe go through a couple of scenarios and then...
Okay. I'll give you a scenario. Let's imagine that you are in a country where you don't have much access to native speakers, but you listen to Luke's English podcast regularly, and your English is at a pretty good level. You're certainly sort of upper intermediate, for example, but you need to find ways of becoming more fluent, more confident, and improving your pronunciation, sort of pushing it to an advanced or proficient level. So breaching the intermediate plateau. From abroad.
All right. So, in terms of the intermediate plateau in particular, for me, there's two things. I mean, you've mentioned on one side there is the question of speaking and confidence, and how do you become a more confident speaker with better pronunciation? And then on the other side, there is overcoming the intermediate plateau, and I see those as slightly different questions. Mm-hmm. So let's deal with them one by one. So the first thing is, how do you become more confident? Well, simply you have to speak more. Mm-hmm. All right, it's a very simple equation. If you want to become more confident speaking English, you have to speak more. And so there are a number of ways of doing it, but I'll give you the free way, because you can always pay people to speak to and to talk to online. But let's say you're living in, I don't know, do you know where a lot of your listeners are living right now?
Yeah, I mean, I've got top countries tend to be Japan, Russia, Poland, Spain, Italy.
Okay. Well, let's take Japan as an example. So in Japan, if you're a Japanese person and you're listening to this, you have one thing that many people want, which is Japanese. So you can very easily find a English-speaking person online, and you can set up conversation exchanges or language exchange or tandem partners, as they say in the States. Yeah. And in Japan as well, actually, a tandem.
Really?
I think, yeah. And so what I would do is I would go to a site like conversationexchange.com.
Okay.
Or italki.com, and I would say, hey, I'm a Japanese person. I want to practice English. I can help you with Japanese. And then I would find people who are interested, who look serious, and then I'd ask them a few questions to make sure they are serious, you know, because the problem with language exchange is sometimes people, they like the idea, but they're not very serious about it. So I would, you know, have a conversation, ask them a few questions to see how serious they are, and then start to set up regular conversations. You can spend an hour speaking in Japanese and an hour speaking in English. If you don't have that kind of time, then you can pay someone just to speak to. But then really, all you have to do is to aim to speak with people ideally 3 or 4 times a week, and then you just keep that up. And what you'll find is that if you're not speaking much English at the moment, then by starting to have these conversations 3 or 4 times a week, I guarantee you within a couple of months, your English will be totally transformed, because you'll just have so much practice doing it. We can get a lot more technical, different ways to improve your grammar and your vocabulary. But really, unless you're speaking regularly, you're not going to improve your confidence. Okay, so that's the number one thing. Mm-hmm. On the other side, you've got the intermediate plateau. So maybe let's say you're Japanese and you've been learning English for some time, but you're looking for, you feel like you've stopped improving. You haven't really been, you're not learning new things. Your English is the same as it's been for a long time. For me, there is one thing that helps you break through the intermediate plateau, and that's reading. I think you need to read a lot, because when you speak and when you listen to other people, generally you only hear a very small percentage of the English language. Mm-hmm. We are both, you know, educated English speakers. But when we're chatting, we're using quite simple language, you know. Mm-hmm. When you read books, what happens is you get exposure to the entire range of the English language. You start to learn more words, more phrases. You learn how to use the language in different ways, more articulate ways. And so what you're doing is, although it's difficult, you're kind of pulling yourself out of the rut that you've been in, if you like. You're pulling yourself out of everything that you've been doing, that you've got used to, and saying, right, here, let's read all this stuff. Let's look at different ways of using the language. And by reading consistently, you're going to give yourself a completely different perspective of the language. So all in all, it's two things. It's first of all, having regular conversations, and then it's regularly reading things that you enjoy.
What about listening, Ollie? Because obviously I do a podcast. I was hoping that you would go on about the amazing benefits of listening to Luke's English podcast.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, they're already your listeners, right? So, and they're already listening to your podcast every day, hopefully many times over.
Yeah.
And sharing your podcast with their friends and stuff like that. So yeah absolutely. Listening is fantastic too. The only thing is, though, that listening by itself, a lot of people find it difficult to really know how to take advantage of it and learn from what they're listening to, because it's very fast. We're speaking at native speed. It's all in your ear. You know, you don't have a second chance to go back and listen to things normally.
Yeah.
And so for me, the benefit of reading is that you have the words in there on the page. You can go back, you can take your time to understand everything. There's no pressure. The best thing of all, the number one best thing, is to read and listen at the same time. So if you have an audio book, a book with the audio version, you could buy a novel on Amazon, and then you can get the Audible version as well, and then you can listen and read at the same time. That's the best thing. Or maybe do you do transcripts for your podcast?
A lot of my podcasts have transcripts. Yeah, there's, I don't know, more than 50% of the episodes have transcripts, I think.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the things I definitely recommend your listeners to do is to go back and listen to those podcasts, to your podcasts, and listen and then read at the same time. Do that a lot. Mm. But again, like, if we're talking about becoming a confident speaker, really there's only one thing you need to be doing. Like, it's speaking regularly 3-4 times a week. Until you do that, nothing else matters.
Yeah. Okay. Very interesting. Now then, I was going to ask you about tech tools, because you have a PDF download, like an ebook, with some recommendations about how people can use technology to improve their languages. Do you have any quick tech tools that you could recommend?
Yeah, there's lots of, so I have a guide, which is basically the 10 tools that I use to learn languages on a daily basis. And maybe we can put a link to that in the show notes if people are interested to find that. Yeah. There's 10, so I mean, maybe we don't want to go through all of them. Yeah. But really, the thing that I like to use most regularly is flashcards. Now, flashcards are a funny thing, because lots of people say, oh, flashcards are terrible. Flashcards don't work. Don't use flashcards. I hate flashcards. They're evil. But if you use them the right way, they have a few very, very big advantages. Okay, so what I do, my process for using flashcards is like this. Typically, I have a lesson with my teacher, and in that lesson, I'm going to learn some new words, right? What I like to do is I like to take those new words, and during the lesson, I'll write them down in my notebook. But what's the problem with writing stuff down in your notebook?
You don't read the notebook afterwards.
Yeah, you don't read the notebook. It's you know, I've got hundreds of notebooks full of notes that I never ever read, okay? So what I do is I take the notes from my notebook and I put them in my flashcard application. And I like to use an app called Flashcards Deluxe. There are lots of other ones out there, but Flashcards Deluxe is my favorite because it's very simple, very easy to use. Now, now that I've got this new vocabulary in my flashcards, what that means is wherever I am, whether I'm waiting for the bus, whether I'm on the train, whether I'm on the sofa watching TV, at any time I can get my phone, open up my app, and I've got that new vocabulary there. Now, I also like to use the flashcard system for kind of testing me on that vocabulary. But you don't have to. Some people don't like using spaced repetition. Personally, I do. It works well for me. So whether you use the flashcard testing system or not, the important thing is that you keep like a record of all your new vocabulary on the flashcard app. And that is, it's a very simple thing to do, but then, you know, many times a day, you can just open up that app and quickly revise all this new vocabulary. And that is the number one way that you're going to help yourself actually remember and recall all of these new words.
So I would imagine, for example, people could, I mean, like if we use my site as an example, often on episodes, I will put a little list of vocab that I've had in that episode. And then people can sort of select that text and import it into the app and then create flashcards for the words. And I suppose what you do is you look at the flashcard in the target language and you sort of play around with that word, I suppose. You might mentally create sentences or just sort of run the word through your brain in different tenses and so on. Is that right?
There's lots of different ways to memorize. I mean, memorizing vocabulary is a huge topic, what's going to work for most people the best is to use what they call mnemonics.
Yeah.
So you have a word, and then you try to you do whatever you can to find a way of remembering that word. And you know, there's word association. There's like lots of different. You can create images in your mind. There's many ways of doing it. You need to look at the word and find a way of remembering it. And what I like to do is actually put that word inside a sentence.
Yeah.
So, you know, for example, to take French as an example, rather than having the word temps, if you wanted to learn the word temps, which means time, then, you know, if you just put that word on its own in your flashcard, your brain has got some work to do because it's just a random abstract word.
Yeah.
Okay. But if instead of that, you put it in a sentence and you put it in a sentence like, je n'ai pas le temps, I don't have time.
Mm.
Straight away, you've got all these other words to kind of relate to the word. So you're not just, you don't just have this one single random word, but you have a sentence. You know what the sentence means. And what you'll find is those other words in the sentence help you to remember that word.
Mm.
So I like to put my vocabulary in sentences, and then I like to actually memorize the sentence rather than the word itself.
Right.
And I find that to be a very, very productive, helpful way of learning.
That's fascinating because that kind of confirms a lot of things that we know about mnemonics, which is essentially like you take the new piece of information and you attach it to something that already exists. So that could be a physical memory, like a place that you know well, and you try and fit those new things into that place. You know, the memory palace idea from Sherlock. Or in your case, taking a sentence with words that you already know and sticking the new word in the sentence and remembering the whole sentence, especially if it's meaningful, especially if it's personalized or something, that tends to work too. And I think that's because physically in the brain, I mean, I'm not an expert on these things, but it seems to be that you're creating or you're linking new ideas to things that already exist. So the brain is a system of connections. Sort of sent the nervous system. I'm walking into an area that I really don't know anything about, but it sounds like, you know, it's just doing that, putting a word into a context that you already know does make sense because the brain also creates a pathway to that word. You know, it connects more. The more connections there are in your brain, the more likely you are to remember it.
Yeah, like you say, this is a huge area of neuroscience and research into language acquisition as well, which is, you know, it's very, very interesting. My experience is that a lot of the science behind it is very, very interesting, but often doesn't have much of a doesn't have much of a practical application for language learners.
Because go on.
This is the problem with the language industry as a whole. You have a lot of people kind of doing research.
Yeah.
That is very disconnected from the reality of someone sitting in Japan trying to learn English who doesn't really care about the research. They just want to do something that works, right?
Yeah.
And so I've had big arguments with people who are very knowledgeable about research into language acquisition, that have done a lot of research into, for example, the way that we memorize vocabulary. And my conclusions from all of this, and I know a fair bit about it as well. I've actually got a master's degree in linguistics, so I've read a lot of this research myself. But from my experience, both reading the literature and actually practical language learning, I always find that really the most important thing to remember is not the science behind it. The most important thing is that, look, you are unlikely to remember a new word unless you really apply yourself and spend your energy coming up with a way of learning it. Mm. Most people will hear a new word. Maybe they've heard a new word on this podcast today and they think, oh, that's cool, I'll remember that. But they don't. To remember a word, you really have to concentrate. You have to look, sit down in a quiet room, look at that word and think, okay, how am I going to remember it? And find a mnemonic device or an image of some kind to remember that word. And then with that concentration, with that focus, that's how you're going to be able to reliably learn new words all the time. There's always a few words that you just remember like that, you know, which is cool when it happens, but we can't control it. We can't control when our brain will remember something or not. And so the number one most reliable way of memorizing a new word is to sit down and come up with a strong association, anchor, link, whatever you want to call it, a strong way of remembering it for you personally.
Right. So what I often see with students is they have all their words written in a notebook and they've put translations next to them and they sit there preparing for their exam and they just look at the list and they just kind of, you know, they're just reading through the list. There's not really much of a there's not much depth going on there. They're not forcing those words into their minds with you know, these in-depth connections that you've just mentioned. It's really interesting, really great advice. I've got another question for you, right? So it's sort of just a slightly different question. Do you think that some people are language proof? And when I say that, when the reason I ask that is because having worked as an English teacher for 15 years, you've been an English teacher too. You've worked as a teacher as well, I understand. So having worked as an English teacher for 15 years, you meet some people, some students, and also some teachers, certainly teachers, who let's say they've had a bad student and they say, this student is language proof. Like that, there's nothing we can do with this particular individual who's been at the school for a year. They've done everything that we've got, you know, they're language proof. Now, do you agree with the idea that some individuals, just for one reason or another, can't acquire a second language?
Listen, I think it's undeniable that there will be some people for whom learning a language is simply not, or how can we say, very, very challenging.
Yeah.
Just like anything in the world, I mean, there are some people who can't do maths, for example. There are some people who have dyslexia and they can't spell.
Right.
There are some people who have all kinds of challenges for whatever reason or another.
Yeah.
But I think we have to assume that those are in the minority because we probably can't influence that. Okay, so we're talking about people who are.
We're talking about learning difficulties and so on, you know, things that are a barrier that prevent people from being able to learn many things, not just language.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. I mean, so assuming that that's not the case with these individual students that you're talking about, here's how I see this problem. As you say, I taught for many years. I've got a lot of experience as a teacher. And here's the big difference between the students that I had in the language schools and me as a language learner.
Mm.
When I want to learn a language, it's all me. I'm motivated. I want to learn the language. I have responsibility for learning the language or not. But what a lot of people do is, and it's not their fault because this is also the way that language schools tend to present themselves. And, you know, you can maybe tell me if you agree with this or not. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a language school might present itself as the world's English experts, for example, just to pick a phrase randomly. And so it's to be expected that a student will see that and think, okay, these guys know how I'm going to learn English. These guys know how to teach me English so that I will learn and I'll speak English fluently. So what they do, they go to the school, they get out their checkbook, they write a check, or I guess swipe their credit card, and then they sign up for a class and they think, okay, I've paid the money, job done, I'm going to learn English now.
Right.
No. what happened here is, like, for me, that person then is in potentially the worst position of all to learn English, because what they've done is they've taken the responsibility for learning the language and they've given it to someone else.
Absolutely.
And they say, hi, here you go, Luke, you're the teacher, teach me English. Yeah. And this is is totally the wrong way around. And a lot of the people who you talk about who would be language proof or unteachable, I don't think it's they're unteachable. I think they've simply shifted the responsibility over to another person, mm-hmm. and they are treating they're treating language as a subject that needs to be studied like maths or science or geography, but it's not. So the role of a teacher for me, like if you ask me, what should a great teacher do? A great teacher should show the learner how to learn, such that they don't need the teacher anymore. Okay, a teacher has been successful when the student no longer needs the teacher.
Yeah.
And so for a lot of these students who are unteachable or language proof, simply I think the big thing that needs to happen is that they need to start taking the responsibility for learning themselves. Use the teacher in the class as a resource for answering questions and things like that, but then they need to go away and practice and study in their own time outside the class.
Mm, yeah, I totally agree. I've always thought that. I find that the successful students that I meet in schools are the ones that realize the classes that they are attending are a sort of a springboard or a launch pad for their own sort of self-guided learning, that they do both, that they kind of use the classroom as a chance to check the stuff that they've already got going on in their mind, and to sort of confirm kind of quickly the things that they're already working out for themselves. And and the bad students are the ones who turn up at the language school, and as you say, they think, right, job done, here I am, all I need to do is be in the room, and everything else is just going to slot into place. And that's just really far from the truth, that just being in the room is the absolute bare minimum. I think, to be honest, a lot of people that we meet in language schools, or some of them, have been sent there essentially by someone else. You know, like they've got a parent or maybe an employer who said, you need to study English, you need to go into this room, and, you know, contracts have been signed and money's been exchanged and stuff like that. And so they think, well, I'll just be in the room and then my parents will be happy, or I'll be in the room and my boss will be off my back. Yeah, I think that if any of my listeners are in that situation, which I don't think they will be, because if they're listening to this, they're probably switched on and they're probably the right kind of learner, I imagine. But if they are, they need to think, wait a minute, you can't learn a language to please someone else, and someone else can't learn a language for you, right? Like I always want to say that to some of my students in class. It's like, I can't learn the language for you. You have to be doing most of the work, and that includes, you know, students who are too quiet or not engaged enough. I could go on about that for a long
time.
Yeah,
but basically what you're getting at is motivation, which is one of mm-hmm. you know, we commonly think of as one of the three key things that are necessary for a language to be learned, is motivation. You cannot give anybody else the responsibility. You have to want it yourself, and you have to do the work. And you know, if I have someone, you know, for example, now I don't give language lessons
mm-hmm.
because I don't find them effective. What I do sometimes is language coaching. So somebody comes to me and says, like, Ollie, I really need to learn Spanish quickly. What can I do? And then, so I would coach the person. I would almost never teach them. I would never say, look, this is how you conjugate a verb in Spanish.
Yeah.
Instead, they're going to come to me, and the first thing I'm going to say is, right, what did you do for the last 7 days on your own? What? You didn't do anything? Okay, this session is over. Go back, study every day for the next week, and we'll talk again next week.
Yeah.
Because that's what's going to make a difference. It's not me saying, okay, let's practice I don't know, verb endings in Spanish. Let's do the work. Let's study every day. Let's practice. Let's do that. I can't help you until you actually do that stuff in the first place.
Right.
And
sometimes
one of the big challenges for language schools is students who are simply not motivated to learn. And if you're not motivated, you will not learn to speak another language, however many hours of class time you have.
I know that a lot of good language schools are attempting to incorporate that into their programs, and they focus on student-centered learning and students kind of setting their own aims and having a sort of a roadmap that they create themselves, and the teachers are there to try and guide them in creating their roadmap and all that sort of thing. So a lot of places do that, but students need to realize. Like, I remember one particular person I had once, this Korean girl, her parents had sent her to London, and they were like, go to London, go and learn English. And she went, and the year, you know, whatever it was, 9 months, the academic year, went by pretty quickly for her. And I imagine probably the first half of the year, she was just in shock. Like, I'm in London, it's different, you know, the weather's bad and I can't find any Korean food that I like. And then by the end of her...
I know a very good Korean place in London.
Yeah, there are really good Korean places in London. In fact, there are really good Korean places all over the shop. They're in the USA, there's really nice Korean barbecue places in Paris. Love the, what is it, bulgogi? It's delicious, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, I had her in my class at the end of her time. So I was the last 4 weeks of her time, and I was doing the typical needs analysis that we do at the beginning of a course, and she was not happy. I really picked up on the fact that she was really not happy, and we talked in the classroom for maybe 10 minutes, and she was like really expressing all these problems, and it turned out that she panicked because she realized, I've been here for 9 months, and my level is not good enough to impress my parents. My parents are going to be so disappointed and angry with me. And she started by throwing it onto me to an extent as a representative of the school. Like, how could you let me not achieve my aim? And, you know, partly the school is to blame because we should have recognized it. But then, you know, ultimately she should have taken responsibility for herself earlier in the process. And if she had done, her English probably would have been a lot better. So I suppose that's a warning for both the student, which is that if you go to another country to learn, you have to be the one who's in control of your learning. You have to take responsibility for it. And for the language schools, we need to try and identify when someone is not doing that and to kind of, you know, point them in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'd add to that is, like, for students, though, it's not their fault. So if anyone's, you know, listening to this and thinking, like, oh, I've just been spending all my money on language schools and I haven't been studying much myself. You know, yeah. It's not your fault because our education system on the whole is useless with languages. We teach languages at school in a way that's totally unsuitable for students that doesn't work. Most people now have a very negative experience of learning languages at school, and the way that languages are taught in most of the schools around the world is a teacher standing at the front and lecturing about grammar. Mm-hmm. Let's learn the present tense today. Let's learn the future tense today, whatever.
Yeah.
And so when students come to language schools, they have this experience of learning when they were at school, and that's what they're expecting.
Yeah.
But it's not their fault, because that's the way that the system, the education system has conditioned them to expect their language teaching to be.
Yeah, absolutely. The whole world is like that. The whole world has this idea of what a language classroom should be. Yes, it's very complicated. I have loads of things that I'd like to ask you about. Maybe I can just have you back on the podcast at some point in the future. But, you know, for example,
let's just do another one. Yeah,
maybe I would like to, for example, ask you about your daily routine. But I think that I think that people can find out about those things on your podcast and your website. You know, about your sort of what your routine is and how you spend your day and little ways you find little bits of time to focus on learning vocab or other things like that. Like, I've seen you self-talking. Is that something that you've talked about? Did I see you talking to yourself?
I don't know if you're spying on me. Self-talk is something that's great. It's not something I've talked about a lot, but I think I have done recently. I mean, I think the best thing, if anyone's interested in seeing, like, exactly what I do every day, then there's a post on my blog that maybe we can link to in the show notes called My Crazy 5 a.m. Language Learning Routine.
That's it.
And there I tell you kind of
step by step exactly what I've been doing recently to learn. And a lot of people liked that post. I think they liked to see exactly what was in it. So if anyone's interested, feel free to check out that post.
Just the thing about talking to yourself, I'm not saying that you've been walking around sort of babbling incoherently in public.
No, but I do. That's exactly what I do.
Really?
Yeah, exactly. One of the things I do, one of the things I like to do is because it's difficult to practice 8 languages, right? So one of the things I'll often do is to think of something. Like, say, for example, the other day I met my Brazilian friend for dinner. And on the way home, there was a phrase that he said, something that he said to me in Portuguese. And so what I did, I was sat on the tube and I tried to say that phrase in all the different languages I know. And I probably looked like a crazy guy from the outside. But that's one of the things that helps your brain to switch between different languages.
Were you saying those sentences out loud?
Yeah.
So you were just sitting there on the bus. Were you on your own?
So I mean, look, I don't like to seem stupid to the outside.
No.
So if I'm on my own, if I'm walking down the street, then I'll say it out loud, absolutely. Mm. But if I'm on a train, I'll do it under my breath.
You know? Right. Okay. That's what I remember seeing a video of you doing. You were sitting on a plane, and you were.
Oh yeah,
your lips were moving, right? But you weren't actually saying the words, but your lips were moving. I find that to be quite interesting because that's like a little technique that people can do, which means that, you know, if you've got some sentences or some phrases or even just if you're just creating some discourse, like you just want to practice talking about a subject and you're in a public place and you don't want to seem like a crazy person, then, yeah, you can just kind of say let your lips move, but you're not actually producing the sounds. It's like, you know, it's not as good as proper speech, but it's better than just either reading the words on the page that you've written down or just thinking the words, at least moving your lips a little bit. Just like these little things that we can do that can make incremental differences to our improvement.
Yeah, it's little and often. You know, I'd always say to people, you can do a lot in 5 minutes, because if those 5 minutes happen throughout the day, then that's a lot of time throughout the day. Yeah. So you can do a lot, and it's all about, you know, doing a little bit here, a little bit there, and just having it on your conscience and just trying to do a little bit all the time and making it your lifestyle.
Yeah. Really. Now, lastly, like the last thing I might ask you, well, I'm going to ask you is, I was wondering if you could give me some advice about my French. Now, on your podcast, as you said, what you do is that people send you questions or voice messages and you sort of respond to those things, giving advice. Now, I'm learning French, but I have to say at the beginning that I'm actually very embarrassed about my French, and this is part of the problem. So can I just kind of tell you a few things about my French and ask you to perhaps give me a bit of advice? Okay, so I'm not exactly the same as you, because learning French is not my main mission. It maybe should be, but it's not. I've got lots of other things going on. I've got my podcast and all these other things. And I have a lot of embarrassment about my French. It's got to the point where I'm really quite shy and embarrassed about it. I've been living in France for a couple of years. Basically, my French should be much better than it is. And so that is weighing on my mind. Also, I'm very aware of what a bad student I am in French, because I'm aware of all these metacognitive strategies and how I'm not applying them. So I'm sort of aware of how unsophisticated my French is compared to my English. I know I'm a bad student, and I feel feel a certain amount of shame about it. My French is not improving, but my excuses are getting better all the time. So what do you think? How can I overcome these issues? That it's not my primary goal. I'm a very busy person.
Okay, I've got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think what I need to do is devote more time every day. And I also need to just think to myself, well, I really shouldn't be embarrassed. I shouldn't worry about it, because that's just blocking me from making progress. So I should just get rid of any sense of embarrassment and just stop beating myself up about it. And every day find certain things that I should be doing and just do them and have fun with it and use every little opportunity that I have to practice my French and not feel bad if I make mistakes and have some systematic way of recording and practicing vocabulary. And I mean, you know, my wife is French and our relationship, our relationship is in English, you know, and we started in English and so it kind of works in English. And we do, we often say, oh, we've got to speak French. And then we do speak French and then something happens, something important happens and we switch back to English and, you know.
Okay. Yeah. So look, I mean, as you're talking, there's a number of issues coming up there.
I've got a lot of issues.
Well, sorry, I didn't mean that in a negative
way. No, it's
a number of challenges.
Yeah.
The first thing is, I mean, as soon as you said, it's not my main mission.
Right
there, that's the main problem.
Okay.
Because it's just kind of something that you're putting to the side. Now, it doesn't have to be your main mission in order for you to learn to speak French well, but you do have to devote a certain amount of time to it. So the first thing that I'd say is that you need to make some kind of commitment to yourself. You need to shake yourself up out of whatever your routine has been for the last however long, months or years. You need to say, right, something has to change. Just like when you decide one day, right, I'm going to get healthy, I'm going to go to the gym.
Yeah.
And I would simply make a small commitment to yourself. And I'd start by saying, right, I'm going to do whatever it may be. Maybe you have a textbook that you want to get through. And you're going to say, right, I every morning before work, I'm going to do 20 minutes of my textbook. And then just do that. Get that working and just do 20 minutes of your – don't aim for the stars. Just something simple that you can commit to. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do 20 minutes of working through my textbook every day. And then I would say, right, once I've done that for 1 month, then I can add something on top.
Right.
But not yet. Let's start small. Let's just start by adding one thing to your day every day where you – are doing something useful that you know is going to help you and move you forward. Just to choose one thing and do that. That's all I would do. You know, like for example, I'm on a mission at the moment to get healthy. I've been really unhealthy for the last year or so. Mm-hmm. And I know there's two things I need to do. I need to, one, go to the gym, and number two, eat healthy.
Yeah. Okay?
But rather than try and do both at the same time, I'm saying, okay, I'm going to leave the eating stuff till later. Right now, all I'm going to focus on is going to the gym every day.
Yeah.
And so once I've done that for a month or so, then I can start to change the eating and, you know, get gradually better.
Yeah.
So for you, simply, I think for too long, you've just been ignoring it. So you just have to start adding a little bit of rigor and commitment to your week and say, I'm going to be doing this every day. That's dead easy to do, really. You've just got to make the decision to do it. The other thing is about speaking French with your wife. And that is something that many people around the world have difficulty with. Many people marry someone from a different country who speaks a different language, and their relationship is in one language, and it's very unnatural to speak in the other one. Mm-hmm. My advice for this is always to take your learning elsewhere. Don't look to your family to teach you the language, because you're mixing up too many emotions and mm-hmm. practicalities and everything. Mm-hmm. So I'd say, look, keep your family life separate, enjoy that, but then go and find someone who you can speak with.
Yeah.
Whether that's a language exchange partner or a teacher or someone who you can speak with regularly two or three times a week, and have that as the base as your speaking practice. Mm. Don't mix your family with it, because there's too much baggage there.
Yeah.
Find someone that you can speak with regularly. And that can be your kind of outlet for speaking.
Right. Great advice. You're right. I just need to make a decision. And it's a question of...
Well, let's do it right now, Luke. Let's do it right now.
Okay.
What are you going to do starting tomorrow? What simple thing can you do starting tomorrow to start to improve your French?
All right. Well, I've got... I have a textbook here. I did... My wife, being the lovely person she is... a little while ago, paid for me to spend some time. Well, she paid for me to spend some time at a language school. And guess what happened? I was one of those students that we talked about earlier on. But I do have a textbook from the school. And this is a textbook which I have hardly used at all. and it's here, and I've got a CD with it and everything. So what I'll do is systematically go through the textbook, like you said. So what I need to do is devote, you said 20 minutes?
Well, it needs to be something that's small enough that you'll actually do it. So if half an hour is too much, why not make it 15 minutes? You don't have to stop at 15 minutes. Often when I do this, I actually, you know, I say to myself, okay, only 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But then as soon as getting started is the hard bit, right? So as soon as you get started, you can go on for 15, 20 minutes if you want to, but you say to yourself, all right, it's only 5 minutes.
Okay. Well, what I'm going to do then is I'm going to go through this book and I'll say, I'm going to say 10 minutes at the beginning. So cool. I'll do 10 minutes of the book. And after 10 minutes has elapsed, I can do something else or I can continue. Now, I think what your method is that you make that a habit. You build habits into your life, or you build it into your routine. And after a while of doing 10 minutes, if that is then a sort of habitual thing, I can build some. I can just add something on top of that, and step by step, piece by piece, start to climb up the mountain, as it were. It's not a mountain,
it kind of is. In a way. But yeah, but that sounds great. 10 minutes every... When are you going to do it? Morning or evening?
It's going to have to be evening. I think that probably the time is to do it at about 6 o'clock.
Is that when you get home?
That's often when I get home, or that's often when I've finished doing my work for the day and I'm thinking about food and I'm farting around doing other things. So there's a window.
So what I would say is I try to have a commitment. So I'd say when I walk through the door at home, when I get home and walk through the door, I will take off my shoes, sit down at the table and open my textbook.
Okay. So when I get home, I'll open the door, take off my shoes. Do I have to take my shoes off?
I don't have to. It depends. I take my shoes off at home. So you don't even have to.
I'm just
kidding. Walk through the door, close the door, sit down at the table, get out your textbook and set a timer for 10 minutes.
Okay. I'm going to do that.
What that does is that gives you something very real. Gives you a time and a place, which we call a trigger.
Yeah.
And then after a few days of doing that, that trigger will become so strong for you that you actually have to make the decision not to do it, which is way harder. So so do that. Try and keep it up. Don't even add anything else for 2 weeks. Just try to get that happening for 2 weeks every day.
And
see what happens.
Okay, done.
I'm excited, man. That's
great. I have to start today, don't I?
I will.
I'm starting today. All right, good.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting, actually. That's exactly the sort of thing I need, you see, Ollie.
You need someone just to smack you around the face and say, look, just
need someone just to go, look, come on, wake up. All right. So I wonder if my listeners, I mean, obviously, they're probably enjoying listening to me sort of having a revelation about my language learning and sort of struggling and being embarrassed and stuff. I wonder if they're enjoying that. But I wonder if any of my listeners also are kind of thinking about similar things that they could do. Maybe they're thinking at this point, all right, maybe I'm going to do the same thing as Luke. I'm going to say, all right, for 10 minutes every day, I'm going to work on one specific thing. Maybe, you know, I'll let my listeners decide what that is. But hopefully my listeners will join me on this. Yeah, I hope so.
Why don't we set a little challenge? Do you have show notes on these episodes?
Yes, I do.
Can people leave comments on there?
Yes, they can.
Cool. Why don't we do something cool? Why don't we have people decide what their new commitment is going to be?
Okay.
Whether it's, okay, I'm going to study my textbook for 10 minutes every day when I get home, or I'm going to have three speaking sessions every week with my tutor.
Yeah.
Why don't we can have them go to the show notes and you can give people the link and then they can go and leave a comment with what they're going to do. And then I'll come in myself into the comments and I'll give people some tips and some advice for how I think they could be successful.
Fantastic. So they can leave their commitment, their new commitment in the comment section. And then you can come in and just like add a couple of little comments just to sort of give them suggestions and things. That would be amazing. That would be absolutely amazing. All right. I know that you've got to go because you've got things to do. Just remind us again how we can find you and your work.
Yeah. So the simplest thing to do would be to reach into your pocket, get out your phone right now and head over to iwillteachyoualanguage.com. And then if you like podcasts, which I'm guessing you do, you can just open up iTunes or whatever podcast app you have and search for I Will Teach You a Language, and you'll find the blog and the podcast right there.
Great. Okay. Well, it's been fascinating talking to you, Ollie, and thank you very much for your advice. And, you know, I look forward to listening to more of your episodes in the future.
Yeah, cool, man. Thanks very much. It's been great fun, great questions. And, I hope it was useful for people.
I'm sure it is. All right. Well, have a great day.
Yeah, you too.
Cheers. Thanks, Ollie.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So there you have it. That was the interview. I hope you enjoyed listening to me talk to Ollie. I think you'll agree that there is a lot to learn and to think about from that conversation. Don't forget to visit the page for this episode where you can find other bits of information, links to many of the things that Ollie mentioned in that conversation. So what about this commitment then, making a commitment to your language learning? Why don't you join me? I'd like you to just think of one specific thing that you can do every day as part of your daily routine. It could be related to pronunciation, vocabulary, grammar, reading, or any area of English that you think is important to you. Write your commitment in the comments section of this episode. Then Ollie will read your comments and give you some personal encouragement himself. That's right, he said that he will write comments to you with some encouragement. For example, your commitment could be, as a starting point, it could be, I will read a novel in English for 10 minutes every morning when I get up. Just 10 minutes. Think of your commitment, whatever it is, and write it in the comments section. Go ahead and give your English a boost. It could make all of the difference. So don't forget, if you want to check out Ollie's stuff, you can go to his website, and that is iwillteachyoualanguage.com. You can read his blog posts, you can download his ebook, and you can sign up to his mailing list and get sort of, you know, interesting content in your inbox regularly. Or you can just listen to his podcast, which is the I Will Teach You a Language podcast, which you can find in most places like Stitcher, Radio, I think, and iTunes and other stuff like that. Okay. Also, you can find Ollie on Twitter, and his Twitter handle is Ollie_IWTYAL. Okay. Right. I think that's probably it. We did mention in that conversation reading in English and the importance of reading. Now, if you'd like to read a book in English, but you don't know which one to choose, then I do have a reading list on my website. And that's basically a list of every single book that I've ever recommended or mentioned in episodes of this podcast. So if you just go to the menu and where it says audiobook or free audiobook, just put the mouse over that. You'll see another little menu item that says reading list. Click on that and you can see a list of all the titles of books that I've talked about in the past. Also, if you'd like to know more about using mnemonics and memory techniques for remembering vocabulary, you can listen to my episode about that subject. It's episode number 167, and it's entitled Memory, Mnemonics, and Learning English. And finally, let me just remind you about the sponsors for this show who decided that they wanted to give my listeners the chance to get $10 worth of free lessons or speaking sessions. So with iTalki, you can find teachers or native speakers to give you speaking practice from the comfort of your own home. iTalki uses Skype as a platform, and you can pick your teachers and schedule classes based around your specific lifestyle and routine. Speaking to native speakers is a vital way of genuinely accelerating your English. And remember that Lepsters, you get a discount if you sign up by going to teacherluke.co.uk/talk. And Ollie Richards is one of a number of like successful language learners, these polyglots, who use iTalki as their way to basically practice their speaking in different languages. So, as I've said before, if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for us. So that's teacherluke.co.uk/talk. Okay, right, so that's it for this episode. I very much hope that you enjoyed it. I did. I found Ollie to be fascinating and very useful as a person in general, and I'm looking forward to following his advice for my French in the future. Okay, so that's all for now. Speak to you again very soon, but for now, it's time to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks again for listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Ever Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.